This is Deanna Spingola. It is Wednesday, July 4th, 2012, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guest today is John Kaminsky. His websites are resist.com/Kaminsky/KaminskyConnection.html, and that is all small letters, no caps. His other website is johnkaminsky.info. His name is spelled K-A-M-I-N-S-K-I, Kaminsky. Welcome to the program, John.
Good morning, Deanna.
This is actually our second take. We already recorded like 45 minutes of a wonderful broadcast, and then I discovered that my recorder had stopped working. So I'm getting double John this morning. We had a wonderful conversation.
It's a good thing we're both windbags.
I guess. But you made notes, I made notes, and so we're going to do this again. And maybe the second time, you know what they say, the second time around is always better.
Really? They say that?
Isn't that what they say? I don't know.
Well, I started out by talking about the fires that I was worried about. The fires are like both a symbol and an actuality of so many other things. So many refugees being produced that conveniently don't have any luggage to take up space at the FEMA camps. 33 fires in 12 states. People should be worried, and I'm sure they are, but this all seems to me to fit into the larger picture of environmental and nutritional stressors that are really pushing us toward extinction really fast. I told you about my own kind of mirror image of the fires out west. Happened in Florida here about a week ago, and it turned out it was kind of a fire that was in the rain of this tropical storm that stayed parked off the coast for a long time and flooded the entire northern part of the state. I got to walk on the beach yesterday for the first time in a couple of weeks. I hadn't had time to get there, and I discovered that all the sea grapes were all shriveled and twisted. Sea grape leaves were all shriveled and twisted and a kind of a reddish brown color, like they'd been burned or doused with turpentine, which was odd because we had rain. And all the palm fronds that had been blown down and were wet and in a pile had this distinctive smell of gasoline to them, which was not quite gasoline, but something like gasoline. And I'm thinking, this environment that I have always, for 15 years, have considered pristine in my escape from the ugliness of civilization is now covered with Corexit that came down in the rain, and the whole state is like that. I can't imagine what all of this rain is going to do to the crop growth in Florida, because one of the points I didn't make in our first conversation was that, corn prices are going up, for what that's worth. The Florida floods are going to wipe out crops everywhere, and they're going to exacerbate the already existing food shortage. And the other point I didn't mention about the fires and when you had said something about how much you knew about the chemtrail manipulation of the weather and weather as a force multiplier. The manipulation of arc lightning, as a story I sent around the other day, I'm thinking they can take the harp and they can create the conditions to direct that harp, arc lightning anywhere they want. And there's a story that I was just looking at where arc lightning is creating massive explosions, earthquakes, and destruction worldwide, and they relate to those strange booms that happened in your neighborhood a few weeks back. The the strange booms in western Michigan that had 60 mile an hour winds cracking trees on a sunny day. You know this and we know this, we're part of the choir. We're under attack from all different angles, this was going to be our 4th of July show. I know we started the first part by talking about that, and I said the proper name for it is not the 4th of July. The proper name for it is Let's Honor the Way We Bomb Innocent People Around the World Without Thinking, because we have our own stuff and we don't care about them day. It's like, I got to shorten that up, Deanna.
Yes, but you're right. And you can say the same thing about Memorial Day and some of the other holidays that we supposedly celebrate. This is terrible. I mean, it's bombs bursting in air. And you mentioned in our first attempted recording about how the people in Baghdad might feel about our 4th of July. When we went in with that, what did we call it?
Shock and awe.
That's what it was. And as we witnessed people looking at the fireworks, which I don't plan to be doing, that's how they feel. They look up in the sky and say, oh, isn't that beautiful? Well, that's not what the people in Baghdad thought. That's not what the people in Fallujah thought. To them, it was their life. It was the life of their country. It was a total destruction, the destruction of their homes, the destruction of the infrastructure. It was death.
Bombs bursting in air. That's what we worship on the 4th of July. We don't realize the ramifications of those bombings, except that now we're starting to get a little better feel for it between TSA, the weather wars, and all of the pollution that's going on deliberately. We're starting to get the idea of how those people in Iraq might feel. I don't think you have to go to Iraq. You only have to go to the Pine Ridge Reservation to know how to regard the 4th of July.
Yes, I've been there, John. I've been to Pine Ridge.
Means the white man is coming to kill us again. That's what it means.
Right. And, you know, in mentioning the fires, you were talking about the fires in Colorado.
Yeah.
Most people view those as acts of nature. Oh, what a terrible tragedy, this act of nature. When, in fact, if you really look, I would probably surmise that these are deliberate, and because they can, in fact, control the weather and have been able to do that since the Vietnam War. They practiced in Vietnam, and it's part of Congress. They've talked about it in Congress, and that it is used to control. Well, when you control the weather, you control crops, you control access to food, you control everything, you control people. And certainly with all these people leaving their homes, what a tragedy. And it is so totally underreported in the mainstream media. I mean, you hardly hear a thing about it. Correct?
No, I was just thinking, I summarized what we talked about in a half an hour in about one paragraph. But be that as it may, we've come here to talk about the Americans who are gathering in their parking lots to watch the fireworks and what that means and what kind of people they are, and we're those people. I mean, at least a long time ago, before I freaked out about fireworks and kept seeing the people of Iraq when they went off, but we enjoyed fireworks. We enjoy getting together with our friends and family and going on an outing and watching these spectacular things explode in the sky. But it's maybe it's an American epitaph or some other word for that more accurately describes what describes America. And it's just this unconsciousness about what things mean that they're actually looking at. What do things mean to them, really? It's like when you spend all your time worrying about whether a sports team is going to win or not. What does that mean? How are you not paying attention to what is real when you do that? And of course, there are so many of those things that have been dumped on us throughout our lives, whether it's patriotism or entertainment or some fantastic job. But what do all these things mean to your life other than to give you enough food, which of course is essential? But we've neglected to pay attention to the very valid principles that gave us a decent country to begin with, because we didn't realize how it was set up. And how it was set up was an illusion where the rich could pretty much take what they want because there was so much to go around. We could get the crumbs from, this is the trickle-down philosophy, we could get the crumbs from their table and be very happy with that. And that's the way America has gone. But as the population of predators increases, there are only so many scams they can run on the world, and they've kind of run out of new scams, so they keep recycling the old ones. And one of the big ones is this boom and bust cycle where they lend out all this money, and people are able to do fantastic things, and all of a sudden they call in the credit and everybody goes bankrupt and starves while they get rich. Cycles down through time that Eustace talks about that keep repeating themselves, and now we are being crushed by this one because the waves in these cycles keep getting bigger and bigger, and now we're looking at a tsunami where they're going to make us sick, give us poison medicine for it, and then cut off the money and ask us what we want to do.
Right. Well, you talked about Corexit. And if you think about why they used that, when there were other natural remedies to that oil spill, if in fact the oil spill was as big as people reported, I believe that they used Corexit in order to do exactly what it did, yeah. And that is to poison the Gulf. And then when you talk about the fires in Colorado, when you think about the snowstorms, the earlier snowstorms in Colorado in 2005, 2006, and then when you think about California, which is basically the agricultural area, the biggest agricultural area for this country, and the fact that a few years back they were trying to save some insignificant little fish, and to heck with all the people, there were farmers who had to tear down their orchards because they were all dying, yeah, over this stupid little fish that is meaningless to anybody. And so if you look at each section of the country, if you think about the huge flood in Missouri, and all of the farmland that they destroyed to save this little town that had already evacuated, 2,500 people evacuated this little town, and yet they flooded all of this farmland, destroyed it, just to save this town that had already been evacuated. And when you put all of this together, you have to ask yourself what the heck the U.S. government is doing.
It's a deliberate sabotage is what it is. It's
absolutely.
You can't view it in any other way because it's so pervasive and ubiquitous now. It's like it's everywhere in everything, from the groping of your genitals at the airport think of the abominations that have been perpetrated upon us. It's like the Trayvon thing is, I think, the most significant social event since the O.J. Simpson trial. And it's all about getting us to accept the use of criminal behavior as acceptable social behavior. It's like they're trying to break down our moral boundaries, which God knows there's few left. But in accepting the normalcy of having black children or black thugs walking through white neighborhoods at night, if we accept that, I mean, that's the permanent destabilization. That's the permanent war zone. And that's what we're headed for.
Well, you know, even that, I think, was kind of a propaganda op, because basically you have a lot of these kinds of things happening where the blacks have perpetrated horrific crimes against whites. In fact, this elderly couple, several blacks went into their home, and they'd been married for something like 65 years. They beat up the man, raped the woman. And she was in her 80s or something, and she died as a result. Did we hear anything on the news about that?
No, there's definitely a pattern of suppression on that, as there's a pattern of indoctrination to mix blacks and whites on every television show that is. And that's part of the Jewish destabilization template as well. It's funny how, I talk about white karma sometimes, but... It's the Jews who engineered the slave situation. The whites just weren't smart enough to resist it, which if they had lived up to their own moral principles that they claim they espouse, they would have resisted it. But it didn't turn out that way. So now we have the consequences of our actions are that the entire white population has been deliberately brought down to the black level. Simply because it's stupider and they're easier to control. The deal is this. There are no whites in America trying to emulate the examples blacks have set over time in building their civilizations, except the deluded teenage group, which has sucked into the propaganda of style and rap music and how blacks are superior in athletics, which means they should be idolized, which they are. And this, more than anything else, I think, is what has destroyed the white culture in America. Even though blacks today continue to say they want to be part of the American dream, man, the dream they're living has never been part of the American dream, because America is not about ripping off the system. America should be, or at times in the minds of sincere people, has been about constructively building a system. But again, getting back to the 4th of July, when we think of all the benefits we've received in this life for living in America, and it has been a pretty easy ride for all of us, that we forget. And the real thing we should remember on Memorial Day is the lives of all those dead people all over the world who have been deemed either collateral damage or a product that you don't mind losing, that our prosperity and whatever comfort we had is built on the rotting bodies of all those people.
Right, so now we are under attack, and we talked about this in our first attempted broadcast about the many ways in which we are under attack, whether it's from the recently passed Obamacare, which they're never going to rescind. It's like trying to go back and fix Roe versus Wade.
No, I read something just a few minutes ago where there's a procedural error that all legislation of that type has to begin in the House, and it began in the Senate, so it's automatically illegal. Whether that comes to pass, I can't believe it will be allowed to stand. It's like a trial balloon. There's an implementation period where I don't think it takes effect till 2014. And so I think there's enough flap going on about this. 75% of the doctors said they were going to resign from Medicare. And there's such resistance to this because it's preposterous. Now the question begins, how many things that have been preposterous have been accepted as law and practice since 2011? And it's like one thing after another. So we may get this. It's just another way for poor people to be screened out. And that's what they're doing. They're streamlining the operation big time. But unfortunately, they're streamlining it on false principles. So they're doomed to failure, but it's now been 10 years since they pulled off the 9/11 caper. And in the officialdom, on the official level of the world, including Putin and Ahmadinejad, there is no recognition that there's no official government financial recognition that 9/11 was a hoax, that Larry Silverstein made $4 billion. He stole $4 billion from another Jewish insurance company, and that all of the financial transactions that have taken place since 2011 have all been calculated robberies of the American people by politicians that they elected. And again, this illustrates the level of unconsciousness in America, is that most people have no idea that this has happened.
Right. And they actually believe that they did elect these people, when in fact, we are given the people, we have a choice between, the people that are perpetrating the same agenda. It doesn't matter whether you have a Republican in office or a Democrat in office. We're going to get the same exact agenda. You have the left, who are led by the Marxist Jews, and then you have the right, who are led by the Zionist Jews. And, speaking about this Obamacare thing, could this just be part of a Hegelian dialectical where they announce this horrific, horrific plan that the majority of the people hate, when in fact they may have something in the wings waiting that we will accept because this has been so terrible that we will accept what they had originally wanted to impose upon us anyway, and then we'll accept it because, oh, it's the lesser of something that we've already, said, oh, gosh, we don't want Obamacare. And this is the way they operate.
It's exactly what they're doing, Deanna. It's they're turning the world into Palestine, and they expect us to like that. That's what's happening. It's like all I can say is Palestine can't be any worse than downtown Philadelphia.
Or Detroit.
Yeah, especially Detroit.
Now, you mentioned earlier about the destabilization of groups and how they sidetrack and they use religious factors. And we were also talking about a letter that was going on, an email that was going around about Zion Crime Factory. Somebody was asking about his credentials and how could he know so much. And he answered and said, well, it's because I read and because I study these things. And then somebody else said something about his religion, something that he should know about religion.
Right.
And you explained it very well. Could you redo that explanation?
Yes, I pointed out to you that the reason for the destruction of that debate was because a couple of religious pronouncements came out of left field, very subjective religious pronouncements, owing to the particular religious denomination of that person, which everybody in the group couldn't agree with. And it reminded me of the way Jews deflect an argument. Now, we've talked in the past about how you can't put a group of six people together without getting a Jew involved. And I'm not saying any of these people were Jews, because I think it was a clean group. But it is the people, and there's so many Christians who do this, the people who stipulate that if you don't agree with the version of heaven and hell that they have, then you're not going to be privy to their debates and their thinking. And this is the Jews' business of splitting people apart. One of the people in that group, I think it was the same one who criticized ZCF, was talking about how all the Protestant denominations were founded by Jews back in the day. And that... that reminds me of a great line from Michael Sarrion, who I don't trust completely, but he is a great scholar, who said that Martin Luther was dispatched by Rome to set up an opposition because the whole world was about to erupt and abandon Catholicism, and they needed a softer version of it. And I thought, wow, there's a conspiracy theory that I hadn't heard before. So the people who are ruining arguments of groups with religious stipulations are actually doing the work of the Jews by failing to focus on the real purpose of these debates, which is to identify and neutralize the people who are killing us and enslaving us.
How profound. One of my biggest detractors, in fact, he attacks me regularly on religious principles and claims that I work for the ADL, that I am a Jew, and he's supposed to be this Christian identity guy. And it's amazing. I said, if this is a representation of Christian identity, I certainly don't want any part of it.
Here, here. I had another. I'm able to wave all those off now because I figured out how to do it. But it took me years to do it, and they're emotionally gripping when you have to defend yourself like that. Back in 2007, there was this strange guy named I think it's Zahir Ibrahim, who has this website supposedly called Project Hummingbird, who wrote a long treatise on why I was a Jew. And he sent it to Andrew Winkler at Rebel News in Australia, and Andrew immediately dismissed him as a Mossad agent. And it just came around again, where somebody who was not on my list found his way onto my list and presented this. And I thought to myself, geez, I stopped even defending these things years ago. I mean, you can go on and on about I'm this and I'm that, but, you know, somebody like that, I just tell them, shut up. My work stands for itself, and I don't have to apologize to anybody or explain anything to anybody. I am who I am, trying to make the best course possible and to try to get, and maybe this is wrong, a lot of people disagree with me on this, but I'm trying to get as few people killed in this operation as possible. And I see everybody out there ready to kill now. There's a lot of rhetoric like that. And it may come to that, and in the cases of certain people, it must come to that. But I see our ultimate solution as millions of people, and I mean hundreds of millions of people, saying, no more, we have to shut this system down. It is clearly criminal. Obama and Romney are both psychopathological freaks who are reading their puppet lines in a superficially convincing manner that enables most people who are still trapped in all these delusions to believe what they say. What kind of situation do you have to be in to believe what Barack Obama says today, or Mitt Romney? Here's Mitt Romney is the bankrupter of company after company. He's the chief unemployment maker in the United States. And he's the liberator of us from Obama, who has, like I said, no discernible color and no discernible background, who now has the power to order the deaths of anyone in the United States. Hello, America. What the hell have you been doing out there? What have you been listening to permit this to happen? And, of course, you and me and everybody else on our wavelength, we won't permit this to happen, but how do we stop them? We can't stop them at an airport, which is why I don't fly. How many things will be taken away from us because the affronts to our dignity and our honor are so great that we just can't permit them to happen? So it's like we're in the middle of all of this now, and for anybody to remain oblivious to these things, I think is I want to say typically American, but I think is a friend, a longtime friend asked me the other day, because I've been hammering on Jews for a long time, and she asked me, Johnny, she calls me Johnny, how can I dismiss all of the 13 Jewish friends that I have? And I haven't given her an answer yet, but I finally thought of what it's going to be, and that is, if you don't confront them on that, you're really betraying everyone else. If you don't confront the Jew on what he's doing, because what he's doing is, you can explain that. He's poisoning everything.
Certainly. And we all have, know people who are Jewish.
If you don't confront them, you are betraying everyone else.
Right. Well, I have been accused of believing that every Jewish child, man, woman, are in on this big conspiracy. And that is not what I have said or what I promote. However, when it comes right down to it, when things get tough, the Jews will band together because that is their nature. And they are very unified. In fact, they're one of the most unified people on the face of the planet. They will side with each other because they are afraid of being ostracized by their group. And so, yes, of course, we all know Jewish people who are decent people. But I have kind of a litmus test. If they are still promoting the Holocaust, if they're still promoting all of the things that the Jews seem to promote, then they belong to international Jewry.
Yeah, that's a good litmus.
Right.
That's a good litmus. I've kind of recommended the same thing. I was telling Rebecca the other day that the test I use is to pick a Jew that you don't mind losing as a friend. Because if you want to keep them, you may not want to do this. And look him in the eye and ask him about the Holocaust and watch his facial expression, watch what his eyes do, and then listen to the explanation he uses to explain that what you said is a terrible thing to say to anyone, and how personally insulted he is by you asking it, which is absolutely no answer at all, because he has no answer.
Exactly. And people who don't want to answer a question usually accuse you of doing something terrible, the wrong question, or they answer with another question. So, if you know that.
Well, the big question at this juncture is, surely you don't mean it's all Jews, and then you get off on the sidetrack that you just went on.
Oh, yes.
But the principal part of that is really that they can't defend their position, so they slander and evade you and try to make you feel bad and try to coerce you into at least, if not believing, at least accepting what they say and looking the other way. And this is the very thought process paradigm that has turned America from a bunch of from relatively independent, self-reliant people into deaf, dumb, and blind children of the welfare state, basically, where we don't want to jeopardize our status in the world. We don't want to jeopardize our income. The phrase is, we know on which side our bread is buttered, but the cost of buttering that bread we see now has deteriorated into nothing. They've taken all our money. They have most of the population marching in the wrong, meaningless direction. And nobody, because they've all been brought up in a Jewish educational system, nobody has the tools to fix our situation.
Now, you said earlier, when we were talking about the American culture, you said that they taught people women how to smoke, and they made junior men of them. And this basically started with Edward Bernays, who was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And, that happened back in the 1920s. And then, later on, you had the women's movement, which was led by Gloria Steinem, Betty Friedan, and Bella Abzug, all Jewish women, who started this movement in about the mid-60s. And we know that Gloria Steinem worked for the CIA. And this ended with a Supreme Court decision in 1973, which has led to the abortion, the slaughter of 56 million people. And we talk often about the Soviet Union and how many millions that Stalin killed and how many millions starved to death. And yet, look, we have 56 million people who were dead as a result of something that these Jews called free choice.
It's a culture of death for sure. I had a related thought on that. I've been thinking lately about. And I wanted to ask you, did you see that story about the ceremony at the Pentagon celebrating LGBT Day, which is the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Coalition that everyone at the Pentagon was celebrating the other day? Barack Obama came and praised all those gay people in the military. It kind of made me think of Kay Griggs and her blockbuster videos about how at least some flag officers in the United States military are homosexually indoctrinated by secret watchers that follow them throughout their military careers, and that our whole presidential level of Barack Obama in the gay bathhouse and George W. Bush with the overnight muscular Marine Corps visitor, and Karl Rove and Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts going to gay strip clubs in Washington.
I must have missed all of that. I have interviewed Kay Griggs, and what she divulged was quite shocking but believable.
But anyway, getting back to LGBT, I guess I talked to Rebecca about this. I was thinking it was you. The real problem I have with the LGBT starts with the B, which is bisexual, which implies more than one sexual partner. Since you're bisexual, you have, like, presumably one of each. And this is a crack in morality that is so wide. To be promoted as an acceptable social policy undermines every marriage in the United States. It undermines every relationship between a man and a woman, which I think most sensible doctors realize that the best way to raise a child is to have two healthy parents doing it. And this, it's morally wrong and it's sociologically wrong, in that encouraging this gay culture of multiple partners and no families is so playing into the Jews' hands and the Jew destabilization template of making families impossible, and as with so many other programs, driving the whole population toward total dependence on the nanny state. And I mean, we're almost there.
Well, didn't this actually begin with Alfred C. Kinsey, who the Rockefellers funded back in the 1940s, and basically his work, his books, he did one on men and one on women. He used children and actually abused these poor children, right, in his studies, his so-called FA studies. And then his books were sent to a lot of the people in the medical industry. And he was promoted as something, you know, really legitimate.
Right. And now we're back to the medical industry again. My God, everything that has been given to us has been, talk about false flags. We got false flag medicine.
Exactly. What better way of doing this than to get somebody that you trust, an authoritarian figure, and we've all been raised to respect our authority figures, whether it's a teacher, whether it's a doctor, whether it's a politician or a police officer. We're all supposed to be afraid of these people and respect them and do what we're told. Just do what you're told. And certainly we find this in the medical field, where these doctors assume the position of God and tell you what you should do for your body, when in fact you need to take responsibility for your own health. And of course, when you factor in GM foods, aspartame, fluoride, the poisonous vaccines, they have created a growing industry where it is nothing but profit. It is all based on profit because of the deadly diseases that they have injected in us through these various foods and vaccines. And the environment, the toxic environment.
You got me thinking about a lot of things with that one. I remember reading a paragraph to you in the first segment that we did, that is a part of actually my next story that I'm sending out, but it's an assessment of our situation. The American people in the second decade of the 21st century are like so many deer in the headlights, frozen in fear at what the karma of their oblivious behavior is about to bring down on their own heads, and totally unable to devise an antidote to their own imminent demise, trapped as they are in the deranged constraints of their own belief systems. So that's just what you said about medical care. It also applies to belief systems, where knowledge is the answer and beliefs are going to kill you. You have to troubleshoot your own knowledge and realize how you've been duped. You have to reconsider your own perceptions about who you are and what America is. And in fact, you're an accessory to constant mass murder all over the planet. You might say those people don't matter. The media tries to convince you that they don't, then demonizes them constantly. So we need to reconsider our whole paradigm about what we're doing, and that's the only way we're going to get rid of these kooks who are controlling us. I mean, every presidential election does this to me when you consider the choice of candidates that you have. And, you know, in a way, Obama versus Romney is really no worse than Bush versus Kerry or whoever the other guy was he ran against, or Obama versus McCain. I mean, you can go back to Johnson against Goldwater. Isn't it funny? Now we realize in 1964, Johnson against Goldwater, both of the candidates were Jewish, pretending to be something else. How's that? I hadn't thought of that before.
Exactly. Yes. And getting back to the false flag and medicine, 200,000 patients a year die because of medical mistakes and pharmaceutical mismanagement, and yet we never hear a thing about it. And that's deliberate, and as I said before, and as you said, medicine is based on a profit, and, you know, these patients died making profit for the doctors that ultimately killed them.
So, Deanna, here's the real question. What are we going to do on the 4th of July?
Well, I've done a radio program. I'm going to be on my regular RBN program. I'm not going to be celebrating anything. I'm sorry to say this, it's just another day for me. And I'm not going to be watching any fireworks. We'll probably have a nice meal, but actually it's pathetic that people celebrate the wrong things.
I think it's a good day to reflect on the nature of the United States of America. And I love a lot of the recent statements J.B. Campbell has made in terms of suggesting solutions to what ails us. We won't talk about the first one, but the second one is about the Constitution not being what we think it is. We think it protects us, and it really doesn't. The Bill of Rights was added on to the Constitution to give us the appearance of protection, but as we know, if we try to use them when we go to court, it doesn't protect us at all. So we need to reconsider what the United States of America really are or is. And there's the whole thing about the USA Corporation that came along in the late 1800s. And then there's the whole thing about the Federal Reserve and the World Wars. And now there is this constant beating over, our heads are being constantly beaten by this terror threat. And if the Americans need to realize one thing on the 4th of July, if this worldwide terror threat known as Al-Qaeda is nothing but a CIA Mossad construction of hired thugs from various countries put together under the basis of money, just like the Blackwater mercenaries, and used as needed in any conflict on any side. As we've seen on both sides, we see the situation that happened in Afghanistan, where Wahhabi Islamics, who are really secret Jews, installed the Taliban regime in Afghanistan to be over-the-top Muslims like the Wahhabis are, and protect the interests of the international bankers who pull all those drugs out of there and distribute them all over the world.
Right.
This is the one thing in the 21st century that we have to neutralize and detoxify, and that is the control of the international drug cartels, which is right. That's the highest level of world government. The people who control that are the people running the world. And we have to know who they are if we're going to know who we are. And I don't see that happening. And I think we won't ever know who we are. But we definitely won't until we know that. And we're very far now from doing that because we're trapped in this artificial media reality that gives us... Can you believe the string of Republican candidates that they paraded in front of us? Can you believe that there were no stories about vote fixing in the primaries that really got any traction? And can you believe that Ron Paul is really one of them?
Yes, I do believe that. That he is one of them. If you look at his background, first of all, he's a Freemason. The Federal Reserve has been audited. He refuses to look at the CAFR. He refuses to look at 9/11.
Absolutely. That's the crossover line right there, folks. If you believe the government story about 9/11, you are part of the problem because it is. Well.
Yes, look at all the things that they've imposed upon us since 9/11. The Patriot Act, the TSA. First of all, why is nobody saying... How come we're still in Afghanistan? We went to Afghanistan in the autumn of 2001 to capture Osama bin Laden. Okay, we didn't capture him. Why are we still there? It is, as you say, to operate the drug operation over there, to protect the drugs.
I just read a famous line by a famous Indian the other day. I forget which one it was, so I won't try to name him. But he said... The white man didn't break all their promises to Indians, but they kept only one promise. They said they were going to take our land, and they did.
Wow.
So that's what's going on around the world. People go in there, and really it's the same way the Jews inveigle us into accepting their programs and they've gotten so many people to believe in the merits of communism when it's just a murderous hoax from the get-go.
And the multiculturalism. Even, you mentioned sports. Look who owns the sports teams. This one guy, I don't know who he was, but he just got a $100 million contract over a five-year period.
Right.
And what does that do to the average person? I don't know whether the guy was black or... Yeah, I think he was a black guy. And so behind everything... Even behind organizations, we talked about humanitarian organizations and, like Code Pink or they want to lead all of these groups in order to control them. They pretend to be compassionate when they are in fact not compassionate at all. And yet they want us. You said earlier that they want to appeal to our own humanitarianism and they do that very well.
Yeah.
They talk about, going into Haiti and helping those people. Well, the other day I read that some of that money that people donated was used by Clinton and Bush to invest in a hotel down there. when they set up that phony humanitarian scheme, I think they picked out the name of their website before the thing even happened.
Well, I'm sure, yeah.
They always make money off of chaos. Always. whether we're talking about warfare or the Colorado fires, they're going to make money off of that.
So each person has to ask him or herself what the important thing is. And is it making money? We get about a 95% on that. Or is it making yourself feel worthwhile? I've often said that how much money you make in this life is inversely proportional to how much good you do, but that's really not fair to a lot of well-meaning people. I think that people have to ask themselves why they're here, and nobody does. Everybody's too busy just making ends meet and trying to feed the kids and trying to stay out of harm's way, which is why I can't really fault any of the too many of those people, at least the non-Jews among them, who use pen names to be on the internet because they have interests to protect, like kids. And the trouble with that is that it's a fallacy that you can hide yourself on the internet, because no matter what kind of alias you use, they know who you are simply by their Google database.
Right. You said earlier your life is toast no matter what your income is.
I said that?
Yes, I wrote it down the minute it came out of your mouth. That I thought that was very profound.
Yeah, unfortunately it is. There are so many negativities now. The next generation has been wiped out virtually between the Gardasil shots and the little boys with boobs. We have been scrambled so badly. We are being scrambled so badly. We definitely don't realize what's happening to us. We definitely don't realize how our DNA is being cut up by microwaves, and so many other polluting kinds of things. But I think in all instances, Clayton asked me this one time, and he was describing ancient people as different. I don't think they were. We've always been the same down through time. Which is why we're able to read the ancient Greek and Roman stuff and have it be so vivid and human. They're the same people. They're the same things. So no matter what is happening, we got to have the same rules under the circumstances. And the rules are to try not to hurt anybody else, to get enough stuff, get enough food to feed yourself. You know, one of the great things about getting older, it's amazing. I wouldn't listen to my father when he said this, but it's true. You see so much more. You see how much time you've wasted in your life doing non-essential things. Now is the time when we have to snap out of this trance of wasting our lives over sporting events, and when the whole world is shriveling up right before our eyes, and it's our belief system that is responsible for this.
I agree. Well, this has been very interesting, a very good way of starting the day. Even though it's been rather negative, I hope that people will look at what you have said, what we've talked about today, and reevaluate where they are, and then try to do something more positive, and to look not at July 4th as Independence Day, because, trust me, we are not. We have no independence. We are totally controlled, whether you think you are or not. We are controlled.
I am not proud of this country. I'm ashamed of what this country has done. I'm ashamed of what the human species has done, too, to itself and to other things. And I just want to say a couple of things. The truth is free. It's the lies that cost money.
Very profound.
And when you deny death, you deny life and kill everything around you.
Wow. What a good way to end. Thank you so much, John, for everything you do.
Thank you, Deanna, for the even more stuff that you do.
Well, thank you. All righty, we'll talk later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.